Today, we are inclined to take our mail and express delivery more or less for granted. Less than 3 hours by airplane, a matter of 8 or 9 hours by truck for our heavier parcels. But it wasn't always this way. When Dawson was a brand new boom town, the mail was one of the single biggest things and one of the single biggest problems. Morale depended upon mail from home. There aren't too many left who took part in the delivery of the mail, and yet one is Johnny Hogan, who had played a major part in the actual delivery in later years, but also well remembers the earliest days of the mail coming to Dawson. Johnny, just what is the background of getting the mail into Dawson?
Well, the first thing I can remember the mail coming to Dawson was by dog team, by the RCMP police, and they had a special constable, and one who was still alive is old Tom Hubert. He's down here in the old man's home. He carried the mail by dog team from Bennett to Dawson, I believe in up to 98, 99, and I think the best time he made on a round trip was 20 days, and they just carried the first-class mail.
Has Tom ever talked to you much about this, John? Does he ever recall any particular winter or trip that was particularly bad or anything?
No, he's pretty hard to get information out of Tom, you know, but he's told me about the time he made, you know, and of course, being a dog musher myself at one time or another, we knew just what the troubles you would have on the trail.
What was his actual mileage then to bring the mail through here?
Well, at that time it was about 460 miles by the route he took.
Mm-hmm. And from your own knowledge of dogs, Johnny, how long would you run the dogs? Did you have, like, relays? Would they have relays along the way?
No, we had the same team, but it depended on a good deal on the weather, you know. If it wasn't too cold and the trail was good, why, you'd make 35, 40 miles a day. But then in the real cold weather, you couldn't run your dogs so fast, and there wouldn't be so much traffic. And then they traveled the river most of the time, and you had storms to buck, and your road would be drifted, and you'd cut you down. Of course, there was places to stop all along, because there was horses and double-enders and dog teams traveling all the time.
How large a load would he bring in, then? Have you any idea?
Well, with the mail, I'd imagine their load wouldn't be much more than about 50 pounds to the dog. Freighting with dogs, we always used to figure 100 pounds to the dog, mm-hmm. and then 100 pounds for yourself.
Where did yourself? Oh, you did a little pushing, was this it?
Yes, you were always the biggest dog yourself.
Well, Johnny, some winters now this river down here freezes up quite smooth, but what about those winters when you get a rough freeze-up? Were there alternate routes they could take?
Well, you have your rough ice mostly out in the main channel of the river, and as you've noticed probably yourself, when the river closes in the fall, there's slush ice running and the shore ice freezes, and if you follow the edges, you have fairly smooth going. Only along some of the bluffs you might have a little rough going, but then the snow drifts in, and you have to snowshoe anyway to get your first trail in, and it's not too bad.
Are dogs as sensitive to cold as the horses were? Horses couldn't work when they got extremely cold. Would this apply to dogs, too?
Well, in not so much as the horses. The horses, you know, they had to, like on the stage line especially, they had to go on the dead run to make their posts, and breathing that cold air, why, you'd kill your horses off. Whereas the dogs, they seemed to be more on their own. They could travel at the rate that suited them in the weather.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, they didn't use the dogs for too long, did they, Johnny? They stepped up the delivery quite a bit shortly after that, didn't they?
Well, they had to. You see, the dogs were just carrying the first-class mail, you know, and they had other mail coming in, and that's about all they could do, was just to haul a few bags of letter mail. Mm-hmm. And being so many people here, there was a lot of it, and they wouldn't have been dogs enough, I guess, to handle all the mail if the way it was.
So then what was their next move?
Well, the next move, they went to stages, and there was another company took over before the White Pass. They bid on the contract, and I believe they bid too low, and they went broke. But the White Pass took it over in, I think it was 1903 or somewhere along there, and they had one of the most perfect stage lines in the world at that time. They had 6-horse teams and new horses pretty near every year, and they had posts along every 22, 23 miles, and the horses were on the run, and they carried about, 12 passengers, I think, was their limit on a stage, and they had a what they called a boot on the back. It was a leather extension on the sleigh, and one in the front where they threw mail and extra mail in for to carry it.
Oh, how did they get this road started, Johnny? How would they get it cleared out?
Well, the government, they cut it too. It was just a winter road swamped through the brush, you know, to start with, and they cleaned it out, you know, by hand, and more or less an overland route. Mm-hmm. They just crossed the rivers in place, because traveling the river, they had so many storms and that it was almost impossible to keep it open. And the government, they put in the mm-hmm. road.
Now you think in terms of snow plows, Johnny. The road would drift. How would they keep it cleared out to keep a schedule?
They didn't clear it out. They just had to break through it, that's all, and just wear it down again and start over. And that's the reason they took to the timber, you know, with their road.
Well, the stagecoaches came in quite frequently, did they?
Oh, yeah, they used to have 3 stages a week in here. And they'd start out from Whitehorse, and the first post was Tequina, it was 21 miles. And the next one was Little River, 19 miles. And then 23 miles to Braeburn. Well, his driver would start off from Whitehorse in the morning, and all these fellows did was drive. They had the old classy outfit, you know, big long coonskin coats and marten caps, and they'd have 2 or 3 tails down the back, and a big red kind of a woolen sash they used to wear. And then they had special buckskin gloves and Scotch wool liners that they used to get right from the old country. And they always had an extra pair of these in the boot on the foot warmer. The foot warmer was a metal container with a kind of a fabric cover, and they used to put these carbon bricks in it. They'd heat them up in the stove till they're red hot and put them in this container, and they'd put it in the sleigh, and that would keep their mitts warm, or their feet if it was cold weather. And all they did was drive, and they had a whip, a 6-horse lash, they called it. And that whip stock was about the size of a lead pencil, a hickory. And they could, those skinners could get this lead horse, which was the 6-horse team, was quite a ways, or they could get the horse right with that lash. Now, that's quite a trick to throw that through the air and pick off any horse, you know. Of course, they never abused their horses,
no,
because they wouldn't have them on there if they did, but they just kind of tickled them with, but it made an awful snap. They used it more on us kids than anything else.
And what would you kids be doing to warrant this attention?
When they brought all these horses in the summer, you see, into Whitehorse, and they used to bring them in right off the range, and they were wild, and they used to break them in down at the White Press stables in Whitehorse, and us kids, of course, we had to get down there, and these skinners would wait till we got in close, and then they'd practice with their whips, and we always had marks around our stern ends that looked like a boomerang from these whips.
Well, was it? Did they have special men to train these horses ready for the sleigh? Must have been quite a job, Johnny, getting them into harness and ready,
well,
wasn't?
Oh, yeah, they had all these skinners that drove in the winter time. They was like the fellows, I remember a lot of the names. There was Al Dart and a fellow named Reeves and Ed Menard, Charlie Chinnery, and Bill McAdam, and Herb McAdam. Walter Scott, he used to be in Dawson, he was one of the men on there too. But they had all these drivers, this Webster, but they used to break these horses in the fall, and then when they'd start out on the stage line, where they'd just start out on the dead run, and they'd made 3 of these posts a day. We got down as far as, I was saying, down as far as Braeburn, and that was the first day's run. Well, the next day would be to, they'd make Montague, which was another 23 miles, and Montague to Carmack, that was a long post, that was 27 miles. And the next one was only 21 to Yukon Crossing, that was their next day run.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on from there to Minto, which was 22 miles, and then 21 miles to Pelly. Of course, they were following the edge of the river. They didn't go the route we go now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went up to over all the lava flats at Selkirk to a station called Wheeler. And then from there to Alberta down to Scroggy Creek, then to Black Hills, Quartz Creek, and then into Dawson. That was their route. And they have made that in 3.5 days.
Is that right?
But at every post, like every post, they change horses.
Mm-hmm.
You'd come from White Horse to Tequila. They'd stable man had run out six fresh horses. They'd have mug up the passengers and the driver, and they get on the way they go to get to Little River. The same thing happened. And of course, at Braeburn, they'd stay overnight. Mm-hmm. The next morning, the same thing all the way through. And at the same time, there'd be stages coming the other way. Oh. So the horses got to, pretty near every day they had a run, mm-hmm. you see. And then besides that, they had horses on the run with this freight, four horse teams with freight, you see, too, traveling. But they only made about a post a day. They took them about 15 days to come through.
So the ones that were on the mail run, this was sort of the glamour job of transportation, was it?
Yeah, it was really it was so pretty to watch them go out, too, you know. They're the best of horses, you know, and their rigging was all fancy, and their coaches were all painted black and red. And in the fall, they used what they called a thoroughbrace. It was a wagon, or a coach with swung on leather, kind of leather springs. It was a leather went fore and aft on the thing, and the coach kind of rocked on that.
Oh, yeah.
And they used those in the fall until the snow came, and then they went to sleighs. And of course, the sleighs were smoother riding, and they made better time with them. Now, at the rivers, in the fall, they had to cross on ferries. They had a ferry at Yukon Crossing, mm-hmm. with a cable ferry, and they had another one at Pelly, and another one at Stewart.
So there wasn't a great long lap then between the boats going off and the mail starting when the heavy snow came.
Oh no, they right in right away. The mail had to go through. That was one of the slogans.
Must've been awfully exciting, Johnny, when these teams came in here like the first one after you'd had a long wait for mail.
Yes, you'd have maybe when the boats quit running, it probably about 2 weeks was the longest you had to wait for mail.
Oh. And would they pull up right down here in front of this old post office?
No, they did. They dumped the mail off behind the post office, and their stable was down right on the White Pass dock. It was right to, almost across from where, alongside the fire hall and the Bank of Commerce, along in there, you see, on the end of the dock. They had their stable there.
Well, then they'd have a fair number of horses then, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes, they had. I guess it must have had 200 horses anyway.
That many?
Yes, they had to have spares, you see, too. And they had a lot of horses.
And I suppose caring for the horses alone would take a number of men, wouldn't it?
Well, they had a man at each post, a stable man. And Mr. Wheeler, who was after general manager of the White Pass, he was a stable man to start with on the mail service, and he ended up as general manager of the White Pass.
And this is the first in a series of Johnny Hogan telling us how the mail was delivered to Dawson many years ago. And this is Arthur Italic in Dawson City. Last week, Johnny Hogan was telling us about how the mail and express and freight were delivered to Dawson City shortly after the turn of the century. And Johnny, I think we finished by you telling us about all these marvelous horses, around 200, I think you said, they kept here, besides the spares and the men who cared for them. Oh, I can understand them working these horses in the winter, but what would they do with all these animals around here in the summer?
Well, in the summertime, they had a pasture at Minto, and they used to turn them out there. There was good meadows there, and they had an awful lot. They used to run out around White Horse, too. They have down as what's known now as the Dowell area, and the refinery area. That was all fenced in, and the White Pass used to run their horses down there. And they had a veterinary surgeon that he traveled from back and forth, and Dr. Hawes was the first one I remember as a boy, and then afterwards Dr. Turnbull, who was, he's still in Vancouver. I saw him at the last Yukoners do, and he was the last of their doctors on the horses. But they ran them all out at Minto and White Horse, and these men, like I mentioned, Ed Menard and some of the fellas, they stayed around and herded them, you know, and look after. They had, their biggest trouble was flies, you know. They had to grease them with lard and creolin all the time to keep them from getting eaten alive with flies, but that's what they did in the summertime.
Well, it's strange, you know, you think of dog mushers up here, but I never thought of cowboys in the Yukon. But they did have cowboys, didn't they?
Well, they were horse wranglers, I guess. Well, the White Pass went on with that until, well, the population in Dawson got too small. I believe the mail contract at that time was about $250,000. Well, then as the population got smaller here and there wasn't the travel, the government just couldn't go for that amount of money, and they cut down on it, and the White Pass dropped out about 1920, I think it was, and Coates and Kastner, Dan Coates, who had a livery stable business here, he was quite a noted character. He was originally from Winnipeg. Handsome Dan, they used to call him. He was a tall fellow, about 6 foot tall, and quite broad, you know, and a very white hair, and very handsome-looking man, and they called him Handsome Dan. But he, him and Kastner, who owned the part of the Dawson News, they put in a bid, and they took over the mail service then, but they started out, they just had, they didn't have the flashy outfit that the White Pass had, and they just used freight horses, and it used to take them 15 days to go to White Horse. I'll never forget this, because we had an old blacksmith here, Fatty Oakton, who was the wagoner for the police when they came in here. He afterwards started his own blacksmith shop and wagon repair place. And we were down there this morning. I was down seeing a friend of mine off on the stage, Pat Penny, and old Fatty Oakton come along, and the stage drew up, and these old freight horses and everything, but he got on, and they got the mail loaded, and they took off, and Fatty heaved a big sigh, and he said, well, he said, the Royal Mail got off, he said, at a good brisk walk. This was kind of let down at the White Pass stages.
Johnny, I was going to say, I was thinking about the pasturing the horses and caring for them, but the blacksmithing and the repairs to the equipment alone would be something else, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, they had a big shop in White Horse. There's wagons to repair and sleighs, and it took quite an outfit. It was well organized, though, and it was claimed that it was one of the finest stage lines in the world when it was running.
These blacksmith shops that we have left down here, did they ever have anything to do with this sort of business?
Well, they did. In here, you see, there was the local livery stables and horses. Everything was done with horses here then, and there was Murphy's Blacksmith Shop and Fatty Oakton's, and there was another one there. I already worked in it. I don't remember just who owned it. But there were several of them, you know. There was lots of that work here then.
So along with the White Pass having 200 horses and all these livery stables and individuals, then there'd be work up the creeks. How many horses would there be around here then?
Oh, there was hundreds of horses around, because there was the local stage lines too up all these creeks, like up to the Bonanza and over to Dominion, and there was even a run up to the North Fork, because there was logging camps and everything up there. And the stage, the mail business was quite a thing in those days, and then all the freight was hauled by horses.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny, now we're getting way off the track of mail, but then there'd be little sort of light horses that they'd use for their small light sleighs and things, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, they had lots of driving horses and saddle horses, and well, Greenfield and Pickering, they had a big livery stable here. Bill Cuthbert had one, and Carlin and Robinson. And, oh, there were several that had these driving horses, you know, and they had cutters and fancy buggies for the summertime, or buckboards. And then, of course, there was the freight, too.
Was there ever enough feed in this country, Johnny? Did they have to bring it in?
Oh, they used to bring in tons of feed. I know when I worked on the river as a boy, we used to bring scow loads of hay and oats in. That was one of the biggest parts of our cargo, was hay and oats.
It'd be dreadfully expensive, and it's so bulky and takes up so much room, isn't it?
Yeah, well, of course, it was a lot. I think they used to land hay here for about $60 a ton, then now you pay that much for freight on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did they have some hay was raised locally here?
Oh, yeah, they raised a lot of hay here, but it was all right for horses that weren't working too hard, but it was the old hay, it didn't stay with the horses, you know. They used to feed it, you know, just in between times, but they had to feed him the good Timothy hay. Most of the hay used to come from Tacoma.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, then, Johnny, this didn't just vanish, did it? Did they just sort of dwindle as other means took over transportation?
Well, the horses finally gave way to, you know, the cats. Well, after 23, they used horses partway on the mail service. Oh. And then they swung over and they brought some caterpillars in.
Oh.
And the old caterpillar that first started on that route is down here in town yet. I just wonder somebody doesn't put it in the museum.
Where is it?
It's around here somewhere. I don't...
Oh, and what sort was it?
It's a little Holt cat. It used to be down by Cusick's garage. I haven't seen it for quite a while, but that was the first cat on the run there. And it ran from White Horse to Yukon Crossing, and then they used horses down the rest of the way. And they gradually went over to cats. But they used, as the road got better to as far as Yukon Crossing in the fall, they did use a few trucks for a while, too, on it, speed it up, and then they used the horses down on this end. And they gradually switched over to the cats all the way through. It's like one tourist said, asking one of the drivers there one time, how did they start with the mail? They said one time they hauled it with dogs, and then they went to horses. Now they do it with cats. He says, my, it must take a lot of them. But that's where they had these small cats, you know. That was the day before they had dozers on them, you know. And if you had any storm or anything on the road, you just beat your way through. That was all. I drove for 2 years on the mail service for the Klondike Airways. That was a funny name for the outfit because we never had an airplane. But we had gas cats. We used to, I often marvel at now how we ever made it. You know, we were out in all kinds of weather. And there was no such thing as having antifreeze for your radiator. Then we had water in the radiator. And we sat right out in the open. We had no heat or anything in the cabs. And we used to make a run. Like my run was from here to Junction. That was up just about where the Stewart Crossing is now. And I used to make that run in 5.5 days up and back. You see, that was a round trip.
And you just sat out there, John. I mean, this wasn't like the horse drivers with their nice posh little heaters for their feet or anything. How did you manage?
We just sat there. We started out in the fall. You know, it was cold, and we just got used to it, that's all.
Gosh.
And, we used to drive 70 below weather, you know. I often wonder now how we ever kept the cats going, but we did.
What would happen if you had a breakdown? Were you in convoy? Were there a number of you?
No, just one outfit. We never, our closest... We had about 48 miles a day to make, and there was nothing in between.
Well, how large a load, then, would you carry?
Well, we had the little cat I had was what they called a 2-ton cat, and we hauled up to 4 tons with it. Of course, we had two sleighs. We'd have to split on the hills and that. But unless there was a lot of freight, we just carried one sleigh, and we'd come right through.
Well, did you have specially made sleighs? Were they as heavy as the horses had?
Same old horse sleighs, only we just took the tongues off and made short tongues for the cats. And so used the same rig. We used to make seats for the passengers out of the mail sacks, you know, and they always used to cuss when the catalogs come along because they made horrible seats.
Well, John, this wasn't nearly as pleasant a trip, was it? I mean, as they used to with the horses. Would the passengers be as comfortable?
Oh, there wasn't any pleasure in it. They used to start out from White Horse and you'd sit up there in the weather and of course, you'd stop it for lunch at some place. Well, it was just an old shack and we'd have to put on a fire. And we generally used to take a can and like a cream can or something, fill it about half full of gasoline and throw some paper in the stove and start it and then lift the lid up and throw the whole can in and stick the lid on, you know, and the whole stove would jump off the floor and all the passengers would hit out the door. But it was all right as long as you had the flame in there first. If you poured the gas in the ashes and then it'd blow up, you see, but it'd just dance and roar, and we had a hot fire there in a few minutes. And then at night, of course, we'd get in, we'd have a hot meal but most of the time at noon it was frozen sandwiches, and it just depended on the weather.
Well, did women and children, if they had to go out, they'd have to travel this way in the winter?
Yes, we used to have robes. We did have some of these foot warmers, but most of the time we used to carry them out and put them in the road. There wasn't anything in them, but it made the people feel better anyway.
Well, were there still the roadhouses along the way, though, were there?
They were, but they were only used every other one, you see.
Oh.
See, we didn't use the intermediate ones at all. It was just for lunch.
Well, every trip wouldn't go smoothly, Johnny, would it? Did they ever upset? Did you ever get into side hills and things?
We used to upset, and then we'd get a storm. Lots of times, I've been 48 hours making the post where I'm supposed to make an 8. Yes, and we'd just have. Then we'd get behind, you see, we'd get through with the mail, and we couldn't stop. We'd have to go right back again because we're behind. We had to make our trip a week, and it didn't make any difference what happened, and it didn't make any difference to our pay. We got $200 a month, and hours were nothing. You got the mail, too. That was it.
And this is Johnny Hogan telling us we got the mail too, and that was it. And next week, Johnny will go on again with his experiences as a mail carrier between Whitehorse and Dawson. And this is Alpha Retallick in Dawson City. For the past 2 weeks, we have been talking with Johnny Hogan, talking about the delivery of mail and express to Dawson City. And last week, Johnny said, we got it through. Now, Johnny, you were still working on the cats. How many were there of you doing this run?
Well, there was three divers and three swampers on the main run, and then there was one man who used to run for mail and back. He was alone. And the two drivers and their swampers from the upper end, they had a longer distance, and they used to make us every other week at the junction. But we had to go from Dawson up there, and 5.5 days was our round trip, because the mail had to be in here every Saturday afternoon. That was and then we'd leave Monday morning again. But this was, we were working for the Klondike Airways, and that was T.C. Richards and the Deacon. That was Phelps. He was a lawyer up in Whitehorse, and we always called him the Deacon. And T.C., he was owned the inn and that in Whitehorse afterwards, but he was quite a character, you know. He used to make a trip every once in a while, and he always brought a suitcase full of liquor along with him, you know, and we always used to enjoy seeing him, and they'd have the whole crew about half shot all the way down and back, because figure all our money went for clothes and rum anyway on the job. But then when Rich would get back to Whitehorse, you know, he'd send us all a long typed letter. I think he used to get the foolscap from the school, because I'd never seen any paper like it anywhere else, and this thing would be close typed, and the whole grist of the letter would be carrying liquor with the Royal Mail. But we had our tough times too. I remember one spring I had to make a run from here to Whitehorse to bring a load of powder in for a special trip with the cat for Warnicke, and I went straight through 4.5 days, night and day, to Whitehorse, and we got in there about 1 o'clock in the morning, and they hauled us out of bed at 7 o'clock again to start us back. Well, we had a few drinks, you know, and we were supposed to go down and load this powder. Well, Rich made us put a lot of hay in the bottom of the sleighs so that the powder wouldn't get jarred, and we had to get up alongside these boxcars, you know, and of course, we were all tired anyway, and we didn't like this walking back and forward with the powder, so Norman Ryder, he was one of the drivers, he got inside the car, and I stood on the side, and Rickinson, one of the other drivers, stood on the sleigh, and we just threw this powder back and forward, you see, to catching it, and, well, Slim Kubke, he was the mechanic there, and Rich were there to see with it. They got out of there, they wouldn't stick around at all, but we got her loaded, and then we got up to the butcher shop. I was taking the powder, and Norm was taking the mail and a load of meat. So we got the mail on, and the part of the load of meat, and the butcher and Rich got into an argument about the weights, and this was about 2 p.m, you see, we hadn't got out of town yet. So we were sitting out there in the sleigh and waiting for them. We said, well, if they can take a long time to make up their mind, there's no place for us. So we went over at the end, and we tied into some hot rums and beer, and Rich came over about 3 o'clock, madder and a hatter, wanted to get us on the road, you know, and then we would go. We just figured, well, sit down and have a beer with us, and then we'd go. Well, he did. He had to sit down and have a beer with us. And finally, we got out and got loaded. Then we pulled up at the inn, and we stopped, and he said, what's the matter now? Well, he said, we're going to eat. So we stopped, we had eight. Well, he sent three men with us clear out of town that night. He wanted to make sure we didn't turn back. And what they used to do with us, you know, they used to load us up at the butcher shop, and there's quite a grade on the main street in Whitehorse. And we always figured if we got by the bank without getting stuck, they'd put some more load on us. That's just about the way it went.
So well, you then, carry all sorts of weird things into it. I never thought about powder.
Oh, everything. And then that same trip coming down, this old cat that Rickinson had, he broke down just this side of the Carmax, the low gear went out of it, so we had to take it apart on the hillside, and we took that out, and all he had was second and high, and I had the other cat there. Whenever he wanted to back up, I had unhooked and go and pull it backwards, and we had to line all these hills, you see, because it was getting spring, and we were rushing to get across the river before they broke up, you see. And we got down to Pelly, and Rickardson turned back from there. We turned the cat around and headed him for Whitehorse, and Sam Woods met me from Mayo. He picked up the stand load, and I had the powder, and we started off from there. And, it was getting soft, and the road was built up, you know, and was cutting off. But we started off in Pelly one morning. We took a lunch. We were going to eat at the summit, you see, and we figured to be at the junction that night. We were 48 hours getting to the junction. We upset I don't know how many times. We ran out of grub, but on this load of Sam's, he had a case of eggs and some fancy sliced bacon. So we got to the summit, and there was nothing there to cook with. We went around, and we found an old scoop shovel in the barn, you know. So we boiled a little snow in it to clean it up again. We fried eggs and bacon in this shovel, and I never tasted egg and bacon. It tastes as good.
The original barbecue.
Yeah. And then we took on. We finally got to the junction, and I got my powder delivered in Mayo, and then I had to come back and come across the McQuestion before the ice went out. And we were crossing the McQuestion. We got across the river all right, and there's a slough just on this side of it. And just as we got to the slough, the river started to go out. And the river jammed, and the ice started through the slough. And Louis Moy, who was one of the fellows on there with us, he was driving the cat at the time, and he hit a cake of ice in the slough, and it knocked the track off the cat. Well, I jumped off, hit the water about up to my waist with the bar, and we got the track on again and got the cat and the sleigh up with him. And just as we got on the bank, the whole river come through the slough. We'd have lost everything, you know. Just wasn't 2 or 3 minutes, you know, and we'd have lost the whole work. Well, that's the kind of things we went through. We used to think that was lots of fun, you know.
And then, would you bring much bulky stuff, Johnny, or was this just the bare necessities you were bringing in on these cats?
Well, it was mostly eggs and oranges and apples and that kind of stuff. And we used to have an awful time with oranges and that. You know, eggs, if you put eggs in with a case of oranges in a load, your eggs all taste of orange. People hardly believe that. And I actually get quite a kick of it because old Jock Spence, he was running the store here then, and the NC, they were the main shippers, and Jock's oranges always came with the NC's eggs.
How would you keep these things from freezing, Johnny? You mentioned oranges and eggs and things.
Well, we had robes, you know, and canvas, and we'd put hay around them. And as long as you kept them moving, they wouldn't freeze. But we used to have to carry all that stuff in at night at every roadhouse and carry it out in the morning. And my old fellow used to work in the old swamp with me. He said, there's only one thing, he said, the passengers have got over the eggs. He says, you don't have to carry them in at night.
This was 4 tons you were moving all the time.
Yeah, nothing. We'd have 75 cases of eggs. You know, we'd have to call in after we'd done our day's work and put it by the fire, and then get up in the morning about 5 o'clock, get your robes all warm, get those things, get them wrapped up, and get on the way. Lots of times we had a load like that, we wouldn't stop. We'd come right through with it sooner than monkey around with it. As long as you kept them moving, you could. I've had eggs from Yukon Crossing to Dawson in 60 below weather, straight out all the time and moving, and all they were in was hay and canvas, and they never froze an egg.
That's hard. The agitation that was.
Just as long as they're moving. If you stop, they'll freeze right away. They'd be cold, I tell you, but lemons, you couldn't keep lemons from freezing. You could do what you liked with them, they'd freeze anyway. There's no sugar in a lemon.
Well, you had to learn a whole lot about taking care of the loads. Were you more or less responsible, Johnny, for everything?
Oh, yes, you're on your own. You see, there was no communications on the road at all.
Yeah.
No. When you left Dawson, you had no communications at all until you got back. And the same on the other end. You could at Carmack's, they had the telegraph line was there, you know, but that's the only place you could communicate.
And no one ever had a serious accident in this end, did they?
No, well, one man got killed down there. The sleigh overturned on him and killed him.
Uh-huh.
But that's the only one.
And how long did you work then on these tractors?
Well, I was 2 years on the mill, sir, 2 winters.
Mm-hmm. And this was the same as the stage. You didn't have to wait too long then between the last boat before the cats went on?
No, we used to start in right away, just as soon as the boats quit. And then in the spring, just as soon as the road broke up, and the ice went out, we had a gas boat. We used to take the first trip with that with the mail.
Mm-hmm.
The outfit, the fellows from Whitehorse would come down as far as Carmack's and load it into a mail canoe, and they'd drift down the river, and then I'd take the boat from here and go up and meet them, you see, and then we'd take the canoe when we met them, and they'd take the boat on up to get back upriver again.
It was relayed all the way then?
Yeah. We'd probably make two trips that way in the spring, you see, before the White Pass took over. They took the mail over in the summertime on the boats.
Well, I'm sure, speaking with Johnny Hogan about the early day mail delivery, that no one took their mail delivery casually in this country as we do now. And we've been talking with Johnny Hogan about the early days of traveling along the trail between Dawson and Whitehorse. For the past 3 weeks, we have been talking with Johnny Hogan, who's been telling us about the early days with the mail delivery and express delivery by dogs, then horses, and then these cats. And then, Johnny, it looked as though the whole idea was to get the mail through more and more quickly. When did the cats end, when they stopped using them on the Overland Trail?
Well, the last year that the cats were used to any great extent was in 32. Bobby McLaren was driving this end then, and they started with snowmobiles on the upper end, and they gradually increased their time. You know, it was a lot easier. It was. I think there was a little more misery riding on the snowmobile than it was on the cat stage, but you got here quicker.
And these had little treads, and they were covered in. Were these plywood sort of things?
Well, they just had it was an ordinary small Ford truck, and they put an extra set of wheels under the center, and they ran these tracks on the tires, and they had skis on the front. And they had a kind of a cab over the top, but no heat to any extent. You know, the driver had a little more, but most of the time you had to have the doors open to see, because you were going through this road in the wintertime. When it snowed, the brush came down over the road, and you were almost buried in snow most of the time. And traveling that fast, of course, you got more snow than we did with the cats.
How fast would they travel?
Oh, they'd make 15, 20 miles an hour, you know, most of the time. And, of course, lots of times they had their troubles, too, but they would come through and from Whitehorse in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Well, how large a load would they carry, or how many passengers could you get into one of these?
Well, for that stage line, there was no limit to passengers, just as long as you could hang them on the rig. But they couldn't carry a very big load. About they'd put about maybe a ton and a half on these snowmobiles. That was about their load, and that would about take all the mail. And of course, if they wanted to bring any freight, they ran an extra one. Mm-hmm. And they most of the freight at that time they to start with came by the cats, and then the snowmobiles carried the mail and passengers.
Well, this was a speedier delivery in these snowmobiles, then.
Yes, it was speeded it up. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't remember just how long they used the snowmobiles, because I was off the run there. But then it swung around, and the White Pass came back into the picture again with airplanes. They had some Fairchild airplane they started out with, and then they gradually increased their air fleet. I think it was the only air fleet that was ever run from a horse barn. That's all they had to start with. They had no hangar, and they used to take them, haul them down off the airport, and overhaul them in the old horse barn.
And where was this in Whitehorse?
It was right down by the shipyard. They used to, and they had the airfield was then up right where it is now, but it was just a kind of a pasture up there. It was always a kind of a big meadow up there. And when I was a boy, they used to have picnics up there. There wasn't much brush, you know, and it was just a big meadow, and they just cleared this off, and they made the airfield there, and that's where they flew from. And then they had, when they started, they used to take off from there and land here in Dawson. They had a little bit of an airfield up here. There was nothing in between.
Mm-hmm. And what about airport facilities in Dawson, Johnny?
Well, the first airport that was here was one that was used here was Doc Faulkner's farm over here on top of the hill across from the ferry. And that is when that flight just after the First World War came through, Captain Street brought his the four de Havilland planes here on their flight from New York to Nome. They landed across the river up on top of the hill.
Well, this was just a farm. It isn't too level either, is it, over there?
No, it's not very long. It's kind of slants downriver a little bit, but these planes weren't very fast, you know, and they were old Army planes. They were de Havilland's, and they were equipped with an American Liberty engine, and they were nose heavy, and the each one had a pilot and a mechanic along, and when they landed, the mechanic had to crawl out on the tail to hold it down when they landed so it didn't upend.
This must have been quite an event. Did you know very long ahead they were coming?
Oh, yes, we knew, quite a while ago, before it was planned, you know, then we all knew it was coming, and pretty everybody in town was over there to see them come in, and there was only three got through the first flight. The other fellow, he blew a tire in Whitehorse, and he thought he was out of the run, and one old-timer was standing around there, and they were kind of lamenting about having to get out of the race about this tire, and he said, "I think I can fix that for you." And they said, "Well, what do you know about an airplane?" He said, "Nothing, but I never seen one before, but I can fix that." So he took it down, and he filled the tire up with rope some way or another and wound the outside of it, and I think the pilot's name was Cumrine, I think, and... Well, I guess the next morning he came sailing in here with it. He told Captain Street, he said, "You never need to be stuck in this country."
Well, then everybody in town would have to go crossing the ferry, and that was the old cable ferry. This must have been quite a day's work for them.
Yeah, on the old cable ferry, we all went over in that. Well, it carried quite a bunch, you know. And this old truck that's down here in the, you see it on the parade on the 17th of August, that old four-wheel drive, that was the truck that hauled all their fuel and everything up to it. It just arrived here a short time before, and a fellow named Black Hank was driving it, and he hauled the fuel up on the hill for them.
And then how long did they stay then before they took... Did they have any trouble taking off?
No, they did. They were here just, I think just a day or so. They all got together, and then they took off, and they didn't have any trouble taking off. It's funny, there was none of them would ride down the ferry hill across the other side on the car or everything. It was too dangerous. But after they got up in the air, you'd see these engineers out walking around on the wing there fixing the engine.
And these were the first airplanes that were in here, Johnny?
That's the first ones that flew in through here. They went on to Nome, and then they stopped in on their way back. And they, of course, they gave them reindeer parkies down there, some classy parkies, and some Siberian husky pups. They all had a couple of dogs when they came back, and they stayed over, I think it was overnight, or they put them through the Pioneers here anyway, the day they got in here, and then they went on. So, and they all, I guess, made the trip back to New York without any trouble.
And that was quite a while then before the regular planes started coming in. Well, then, did they build the airport out here immediately after that?
Oh, no, that was a long time later. The Dorband, he came in here with a three-motored Ford plane, and he landed in there right in the field that's below the road where the horses are pastured there. When he first came in, and it was pretty small, and they couldn't get out of there, and then they finally flew it into a field that was down here just by the mouth of Banana. It was the company farm, and they used that for a while. But they didn't build this airport up that they have now. It was quite a long time later. I don't just remember when that was built.
Well, were they using fairly good-sized aircraft? Because they couldn't carry much of a load, your fresh stuffs and passengers and things, could they?
Well, they used to load 1,800 pounds into those old Fairchilds.
And this was the way the mail was carried from then on in the winter, was it?
Yes, it was carried from then on, and then went on into the CPA with the DC-3s.
Yeah. Johnny, this was a long cry from the days when those Teamsters in their coonskin coats and their Assumption belts and their swank gloves. Is this sort of the most glamorous part of the whole stagecoach system? Was it even more so than these aircraft?
Oh, yes, I think the old stage line, it was really something to see those horses step out there, you know. They're just raring to go, and it was colorful, you know. They had all nice robes and these skinners and these nice coonskin coats, and it really looked like something, you know. It was something to be proud of, and it even looked like the horses were even proud, too.
Much better than these little tiny tractors that were breaking down, and then your bombardiers. And this brings us up to the mail and express delivery in the Yukon. And we've been talking with Johnny Hogan. And this is Arthur Retallick in Dawson City.